Hello and welcome back to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey and we are here to talk about women's professional road cycling. We're going to dive into one of the weirdest races that I think any of us has ever seen, IMSO Gold Race, and look ahead to Flesh Wallonne, which will happen tomorrow as this episode comes out, Wednesday, and Liège-Bastogne-Liège on Sunday, which will wrap up the spring season very quickly into the Vuelta, but we'll get to that next week. So I am joined by Lauren Rowney.
Aha! G'day, g'day, everyone.
Gracie Elvin.
Hey, hey, good to be here.
Because the race was so weird, and it will take all hands on deck to figure out what the heck happened out there, we brought in a fourth voice for this week's episode, Matt Deneef.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Yay!
Really what happened was Matt did such an amazing job on the ground at Paris-Roubaix Femmes avec Zwift that the members, and also the members who listen to the podcast, but also the members of the podcast, were clamoring for more Matt.
Mm-hmm. This is
it's
true.
Very flattering. I'm very happy to be here, so thank you for having me back.
Let's talk about the IMSO Gold Race. The race started as planned, but was paused after 110 kilometers due to an accident up the road involving a police motorbike. The women waited for over an hour for the race to resume. At that point, they were, I don't know how, transported to the finish line and raced three circuits of the local course, 54 kilometers total, which, yeah, we'll talk about that, I'm sure. What that meant for the race, the tactics, and also general feelings. It was an aggressive start to the 54 kilometers with attacks from Lisa Longaborghini, but in the end, a break of three took up most of the race with a massive gap on the peloton. Games of chicken were played by SD Works and Trek. Trek was the one who caved, sending Ellen Van Dijk to the front, who decimated the gap to the breakaway. And it was a reduced bunch sprint, but a huge group for what we've seen from IMSO Gold Race in the past. In the end, Marianne Vos pip Lorena Wiebes at the line when Wiebes celebrated far too early and thus giving me a huge boost of points. a ton to dive into this because, I mean, it was only basically a 54-kilometer race, but the amount that happened is just wild. Should we start with the neutralization and the restart of the race? Because it really impacted the race dramatically. Usually this race is really selective, especially with the four circuits. It really whittles down the peloton until it's quite small. So when attacks are made on the final ascent of the Kauberg, it usually means that it's a group of like six going to the line, but instead we had a really big group going to the line, which favored the sprinters, especially someone like Wiebes, who's climbing quite well this year. The reason that the race was shortened so much is because the women start before the men, they have to finish before the men. They had to be done on the circuits before the men entered the circuit. So that meant that, kind of in favor of the men's race taking place as planned, minus the one climb where the accident happened, the women only got 54 kilometers of racing, which is a huge bummer. And I know that it's like really complicated to have basically 2 days blocked off for racing. But when all of this was happening and I was watching the women line up with 54 kilometers to go, I was just thinking how, you know, Paris-Roubaix Femmes, we are so blessed to have like the two races on separate days. Like the women get an entire day to themselves. And if something like this happened when it was only the women on the roads, they would still get pretty much a full race. Like, I don't think they even stopped the men. They just rerouted them. But for the women, they stood on the side of the road for over an hour, which completely fucks the legs at that point. Like, you've warmed up your 40 some 50 kilometers into the race already, because it's 157 kilometer race. So you're well warmed up at that point, but then you have to stand on the side of the road for over an hour. And then when they restart the race again, it's not like you get a warm up before you get to race basically a criterium or like a short circuit race. So not much could have been done. And I think the split second decision making by the organizers, like, you can't really fault them for that. It's more just the circumstances were not ideal. And it's a bummer for one of my favorite races of the spring. And also like arguably the best Ardennes race. Like you said, Gracie, this is one of the best courses of the Ardennes. And it just got cut, like a third of it cut out. So those are my feelings.
Yeah, I understand those feelings. So I think from a rider's perspective, when you have been targeting these races, like we saw a bunch of faces we haven't really seen this year. So this week is really important to those riders. And then, yeah, to have this mishap have happen is devastating, I suppose. For riders like Capecchi, who've had a long spring, who are just ready to sit out now and have a little bit of a rest, it's something different. But the ones who are just coming in and just starting to get started, like an Amanda Spratt, actually, she did a fantastic job, I thought, in the race. Good to see her up there. Yeah, it's hard, but like you said, Abby, there's not much more they could have done in terms of organization. And it ended up being a hilly crit or kermesse, I guess.
I would just echo all of that. It just it's a good case for having women's races on a separate day because it's a big race on the calendar, but imagine if this had happened at Flanders. Like it's that would be arguably worse to have a kind of monument in women's cycling to be shortened. So that was the first thought that came to mind, like they wouldn't shorten a men's race by this much, and it's only because the men's race is why the women's race is getting shortened. And it is complicated and layered, and not going to 100% dump on the organization for that reason. But yeah, it's just a shame that the women's race is the one that has to cop it in an unusual circumstance. But I also feel like we're seeing some funny incidents like this happened this season. I don't know if it's just like coincidental to have some of these traffic incidents ahead of the race just happening this year, or if it's like a bigger problem. So that was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, I don't want to make light of the incident too much because somebody was injured. You know, the police officer was injured on this climb, which sort of sparked the whole incident. But there was a lovely moment that came out of the neutralization, which was all the riders sitting down on the pavement, patting some dogs that walked past. There's a lovely video, of Alina Sierra and Paola Patino patting these dogs. And I think they must have just belonged to passers-by. And again, don't want to make light of the whole situation and the frustration that it caused, but that video is worth checking out if you get a moment.
That was one of the best like cycling out of context videos that has ever been made. And if you don't know cycling out of context, this guy on Twitter, he's hilarious. I highly recommend finding him on Twitter and giving him a follow. It's always really funny to see all the riders sitting on the road together when I think it was it Dwarves that they were neutralized? It was one of the other midweek races. Yeah. Non-world tour midweek races that they had the neutralization the last time, but both times you see the pictures come out of that, and to see the co-mingling of teams is really funny. Like you see riders from, Visma Lisa Bike sitting with riders from FDJ, and it's really funny because you like all of the a lot of the riders' friends are on different teams. The crossovers we've talked about in the past, and it's just like one of those moments in the peloton where can hang out with each other before they fight.
What else do you do though is have a laugh, I guess. Although there was like one angle, I think the camera zoomed over SD Works Pro Time and no one had a smile on their face. It looked like there was dead silence. And I was like, yeah.
That's kind of because a lot of Capecchi has a dog that she really seems to love. And she should have gone over to the dog, given him a hug.
Well, as Abby said, like it's terrible for the legs to have that long sitting out, but I think the biggest impact on the race was, I reckon it really messed with a lot of people's head and strategy. And I just felt like the rest of the race was really disorganized. And a lot of people couldn't get back their head back in the zone.
Yeah, let's talk about the 54-kilometer race, because what basically happened was attacks started going right away. It's a challenging circuit, and even if there's not a ton of climbing, it's always twisting and turning. There's barely anywhere to organize a chase, really. There are some spots and a chase can happen, but it's not an easy course to control a race. There was the one attack by Elisa Lamborghini with, I think, 40 kilometers into the race, maybe, or 40 kilometers to go, where she was followed by Elise Chabbie and Kasia Niewiadoma, Anna Henderson, Amber Crack, and then Demi Vollering joined them. And that's just like the most insane group of people up the road ever. I mean, that's two former winners in Vålerenga and Kasia. Anna Henderson, who's finally back from broken collarbone from Valenciana. And Amber Crack, who was probably one of the best riders of the spring. And Elise Longoborghini, who's just on flying form at the moment. And I think as much as Longoborghini said going into the race that they would be riding for Shirin, clearly she had the better legs. I think the team that really suffered the most from the shortened course was Little Trek. But I do think that they were backed into a corner by ST Works Pro Time. I don't even know how to talk about this race. It was so weird. Anyway, so when that group came back together, which wasn't really because of a chasing peloton, because you had like the two strongest teams plus two of the other strongest teams in FDJ Suez and Canyon SRAM up the road. It was really like Movistar. They don't have Liana Lippert yet. She's still not in racing, as even though she was on the provisional start list. She's, I think, waiting until the Vuelta to race again, which is a huge bummer for Movistar. I think they've had a pretty disappointing spring, to be honest. They could have chased, but like, why? It ended up being like a Uno X situation plus attacks going from that group, and also a lack of cooperation from the leaders that really brought it all back together. And then this three-rider move went with Ricardo Bauernfeind, Yara Kaslein, and Eva van Aert, which put Voss on the front foot because she had a rider up the road. So even though she is arguably not the one to instigate a chase of that move, it would be SD Works Pro Time over them or Little Trek, opened her options to just kind of sit in. And what you had was like this standoff between SD Works Pro Time and Little Trek. And like, I think this is something that I've actually heard a lot about from riders and directors in the peloton, that SD Works Pro Time does that really pisses people off, is they play this game of chicken. They just refuse to work and they'll leave it late. And sometimes it fails them. Like when Amber Crack won the stage of the UA tour, like they did it in the tour when on the third stage, when, DSM ended up caving and pulling back the breakaway that was up the road and Wiebes won. So they play this game and a lot of time it works out for them. And it's just like, I feel like infuriating to watch and infuriating for the peloton. But I think Little Trek, I've been talking for a long time. I just have one more point. Little Trek absolutely should have just pulled that break back. Like they put Ellen on the front with 4 kilometers to go. Ellen pulled it back like in 2 kilometers. She pulled it back. They had like a minute and a half at one point, but they shouldn't have let them go up the road at all because Little Trek needed every single kilometer of the race to be raced hard in order to win. And what they did was just let 3 riders go up the road and then sat in the peloton and did absolutely nothing. And so you had one attack by Elise Longoborghini while those 3 were up the road, but you needed way more attacks from them. You needed them to be more aggressive because that's what's worked for them all season long. And it was like they completely forgot that that's how they've succeeded in winning races all season long. That's how they won Flanders. That's how they won Brabants. Like they've been winning races because of that tactic. And they just like, maybe it was sitting on the side of the road for an hour. They forgot how to race their bikes. But I feel like you could point to those 2 teams, and of the 2 biggest teams in the race, arguably with the most to lose by letting those 3 riders go off the road, Little Trek is more to blame for losing the race. They were never going to win in a sprint. They let it come down to a sprint.
I just wanted to go back to that move with 40Ks to go where Elisa got away, because I feel like given how good she's been and given the fact that she rode Demi off her wheel, you know, 4 days earlier, why didn't she fully commit to that move with 6 riders? You know, they had the 2 best teams up there. It, like you said, Abby, it wasn't so much that they were chased down. It was more like a lack of cooperation. They just kind of didn't push as hard as they could have. And I would have thought if Trek was going to win it, they were going to win it there. And maybe that's just hindsight speaking. Maybe now that we know it was a big group that came to the finish, we can say that. But it feels like that was their moment, really, from that group of 6, for Lisa then to go on her own, because no one would have been able to go with her if it was the same, if she was as strong as she was a few days earlier.
Yeah, I agree. One of my biggest takeaways from the race was, why wasn't 90% of the peloton more aggressive, but particularly a couple of teams, including Little Trek? It just was a bit of a head scratcher to me, of just being like, it was such a weird race, but it still could have been better. Like it could have been so much more aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. When you have Wiebes and Voss, and that was the thing. So Voss, this whole season, she's had a fantastic season. But I still think if it was a super hard race, 153 kilometers like was meant to be, and she's put on the back foot that very last time up the Kalberg, not to discredit Voss, but if it had been a really hard race, that would have been the best opportunity for a number of riders to have had a real crack at the win. And we know how well Wiebes can climb. So it's like a 50-something kilometer circuit race is perfect for her with a few punchy climbs. She was always going to be there at the end, actually. So, I was scratching my head too. I went back and watched it again this morning. And it was like you were watching, if someone hadn't told you that the race had been paused, you'd be thinking, oh, this group went off the front and the peloton was probably just tapping along all day. And that's why it's so big.
There were certainly a lot of riders there at the end that wouldn't have been there on that final time up the Kalberg if it had been a regular race. So that was kind of interesting to see a few extra people get a few opportunities. Yeah, like that extra opportunity to be in the final of a race, which might be beneficial for some people in their experience. And Lauren, you mentioned Spratty had a really good day. She was probably outside of Longo Borghini the most aggressive from the Lidl Trek team, and had a couple of nice moves. She's definitely good with her timing in attacks, and coming off altitude probably didn't have, you know, peak punch, but certainly one to watch in the coming weeks. And then going into the final, she did a brilliant attack into the final climb. And Trek, I think Abby might have mentioned this in her article following the race, they just didn't follow up on that beautiful attack, which was also a shame.
Yeah, Lucinda was almost like yelling at her. Did you see that? Lucinda pulls off, Spratty does this beautiful attack, but then gaps the field. And then Lucinda is like screaming at her and then talking into the radio. At that point, I don't think you really hear anything, but that would have been with Elisa's form, as we've said, for her to bounce off that. I think only a few riders would have followed. And if they had kept pushing over the top, then you would have seen the likes of like Cassia Nuodoma, maybe Amber Crack, because she's been riding so well, would have been up there. Voss, I still think with the legs that she has at the moment, would still be there, and potentially Wiebes.
Just to highlight how weird a race it was, and particularly the finish. We were talking before, Abby, you mentioned before about how many riders normally come to the finish. I went back and had a look at the every edition since the race restarted in 2017, and the group sizes at the finish were 1, 2, 2, 6, 1, and 1. And we had 19 on Sunday, which I guess just highlights how short a race it was and a lot more riders were fresh. But yeah, it made for such an interesting dynamic at the finish. And we'll get to Wiebes, obviously. But I wonder if part of her early celebration was about just almost surprised that she was there. I know she's climbing well, but I don't know. Do we think she would have been there if it had been the full length of race? I don't know. Could have gone either way, I think.
I don't think she would have been there if it had been the full race at all. I think it would have come down to a similar group that we actually saw when Elisa attacked with 40 kilometers to go. I think it would have been pretty much that exact group of people, maybe plus or minus a few. But I think for Wiebes in the sprint, we can talk about the sprint. I feel like in that sprint, if you watch the overhead, she looks to the right. The sprint started happening, right? You had like Demi Vollering setting the pace onto that flat section, not really doing a lead out. She was just kind of riding on the front. And then you had two Visma Lisa bike riders and Ava Van Acht and Anna Henderson kind of starting a lead out, but Voss was way back behind them on the other side of the group, basically stuck to Wiebes's wheel, arguably the best place to be. And then they were on Elisa Longoborghini's wheel. Elisa moved up against the left side of the barriers and she really opened up the sprint herself. And then Wiebes and Voss slid through on the left side in between Elisa Longoborghini and the barriers. And I think Wiebes did not think that another person could have fit through that spot right there, because when she stops pedaling and she posts up, she looks to the right and there's no one on her right. No one anywhere on her right. But Voss comes up on the left.
On the left.
Through that really small gap in the barriers. And so I think that she thought she had it because she only looked to the right. It's kind of a rookie mistake. I mean, we've seen it happen in the past. We saw it happen at Brabant's appeal in 2021. Demi Vollering did the exact same thing, and Ruth Winder took the win from her. We've seen it happen at the Giro on multiple occasions. We were talking before we started recording about the time Lucy Kennedy almost took a stage and was denied by the one and only Voss, right? Did we?
Voss sneak attack. Yeah. What was I saying? If Voss is still in the bunch, don't post up before the line. Yeah. Because she has one hell of a bike throw. But that's true. At one point, actually, Voss was like quite boxed in because she was right up against the barriers, and then it did open up and she came through. But I just think, yeah, I don't know what was going through Weber's mind, but like you said, Abby, she was thinking maybe someone's going to come from the right and not the left, but it was risky.
But she's undefeated, basically. She's undefeated in sprint, so I know exactly what was going through her mind. Like, she's pretty much undefeated if it comes down to a reduced sprint or a sprint, any kind of sprint. She can't be beat. And so I think that she just got a little bit overconfident, which 100% she should be confident. Like, look how good she is. She's phenomenal. Like, she's entitled to that confidence. But this was one moment where perhaps one more pedal stroke and a little bit of a move with your elbows and it wouldn't have ended the way it did. I mean, it's like a really hard lesson to learn, but Wevis is never going to do that again, you know? And we got this really exciting finish where Marianne Vos, you know, denied at Flanders and Paris-Roubaix. She had two disappointing races in a row and came back for Amstel Gold, won her second Amstel Gold. It's an awesome story. And so I think Wiebes has every right to be disappointed, but she still had such an amazing season up to this point. It's not like this is her one chance at a victory. She's going to win a ton more races to come. So my heart really went out to her, but it was also just a moment where it was like, it wasn't like she celebrated, you know, just before the line. There was miles still to go in the race. And she celebrated.
The Dutch commentary was great. They're like, nay, 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 Wiebes toch, Wiebes toch.
Even with Voss getting an extra like 8 pedal strokes in, she only just gets there only because of that amazing bike throw. Like you said, Lauren, if you go back and watch the throw, it's just like an absolute masterclass in how to throw your bike. She's so far back on the bike and just gets there. It's, quite beautiful. Did you guys see the comments that Wiebes had afterwards about Alyssa Longo-Borghini's move in the sprint? Mm-hmm. She just threw a bit of shade at her for, what'd she describe it as, like she moved suddenly or moved strangely towards the barriers or something like that. There was a word that she used that was like just throwing shade at her. And I went back and watched it and like, there's probably not enough there to attract the attention of the commissaires, but it is interesting how far she moves. And that then makes it difficult for Wiebes and for Voss. And Voss said afterwards that she didn't think she was going to get out. She thought she was boxed in and stuck. Mm. And they only just made it out in time. So that whole sequence was quite interesting. And then behind Voss, if you look who jumps onto her wheel, it's Ingvild Gaskin who ends up with third place, the best result of her career, which was really cool to see. And her reaction at the finish line was really cool as well. But really canny riding from her. She was quite a ways back in that bunch coming into the sprint and then just followed Voss's wheel around Alyssa through the tiny gap and then managed a podium. So that was really cool.
It actually ended up being like a pretty decent and tail end of the spring season for Liv Alula-Jaco between Letizia Paternoster and now this.
Because I think Alex Manley got third at Brabant's.
She did,
Is that right?
And Ella Wiley was looking really good as well.
We didn't talk about that on Thursday. No. What a great result for her.
Yeah.
I was really happy to see that. But yeah, I think we don't really feature Jaco much in our discussions anymore. So they're slowly creeping back. They've got a few good results there and that breakout performance from the Norwegian rider. I think that'll be an interesting one to watch.
A few good signs too from Ella Wiley on Sunday. She was pretty active, which was good. Mm-hmm. So she'll obviously come to the fore in the tours to come. But that was great to see.
Ella Wiley, whose favorite artist is Taylor Swift.
Why isn't she on your draft team then, Abby?
I'm absolutely gutted that I didn't know that her favorite artist was Taylor Swift now, because she did our Tour de France audio diaries last year, and I did my whole story on Ryder's favorite Taylor Swift songs, and I didn't know. I could have just texted her and been like, Ella, what's your favorite Taylor Swift song? It would have been so easy. Instead, I went around asking the entire Peloton and got some seriously judgmental looks from some people. Some really nice responses from other people. Annemiek van Vleuten has Taylor Swift songs on her riding playlist, I think she said, but couldn't name any of them.
I was going to say, I bet she couldn't name them.
Yeah. Well, there's a few really good responses. Actually never asked Voss, I don't think. Well, I can do that this
Well, that's
year.
The thing. You've got a nice follow-up now that you know Ella Wiley's a super fan. Follow-up article this year's tour.
Very exciting for me. Love this for me.
Just a small segue. Lauren, have you heard Annemiek speaking on the Dutch commentary? I'd love to, you know, hear how she's going there. I think she'd be really insightful.
I think maybe, I don't know if she's with Eurosport, because Iris was with Eurosport on Sunday. And then, of course, Sportza, which is what we always get here in Belgium. It's the same two commentators, Ina Bayen and then Ruben. But I don't know if she signed on with Sportza, but that's why Eurosport. Hannes and I were trying to listen in, and he goes, that's Iris. It's Iris commentating. I'm like, I know who Iris is. No, I'd love to hear her, so I'm not sure. We should definitely look into that, and then I'll let you know how it goes, because I'd be curious to see her as a commentator.
Can you imagine listening to a race and having the two of them commentating on a race? That would be like
be amazing.
True.
I amazing. Reckon they'll bring her
we
in.
Need to learn Dutch
tours.
Just for that.
Yeah.
I find Dutch though, because like I'm used to Belgian Dutch. It's different. So it's definitely a different way of speaking the language. But I reckon we'll hear her during tour season, because that's like really her bread and butter. And without her there this year, it's going to be a different dynamic. And I guess we should probably talk a little bit about Vollering and what we're seeing in this season so far. Because at the start of the season, I kept saying, oh, wait, guys, you know, wait for the Ardennes again. She's going to come and smash it probably, and then go into the Vuelta and, you know, just really kick off the season then. But we're still not quite seeing the Vollering of 2023, which is making me think maybe she's going for the Triple Crown. Maybe she wants to do the Vuelta, the Tour, and the Giro or something like that. But I don't know. She just doesn't seem to quite be the Demi of 2023. I don't know what your opinion is of that.
I think that was really highlighted at Brabantse-Pio when Aliza dropped her going into the finish there. And I think watching that, you go, okay, she's not going to pull the dominant moves that she did when she won all three Ardennes last year. I think I still expected more from her, but like Little Trek, I think she would have benefited from a longer race. I don't think she would have won, regardless of how the race would have gone if it was a full race. I think she would have been there, but I actually still don't think she would have won, because I think she just doesn't have the legs for that right now. And I also think if you stacked up SD Works pro time against Little Trek going into this race, she also doesn't really have the numbers. Like Lorena Wiebes looked pretty good, but I think had it been more selective, she wouldn't have been there. Capecchi looked like she was on her last leg. I think she needs a break.
She shouldn't have raced. I don't know why they raced her, to be honest. She should have been on break. Soon as she won Roubaix, done. Go put her on a nice break. Yeah. Get ready for the rest of the season, because she's got so many other goals. But anyway, I'm sure she's got the feet up today, lying on the couch with her cute dog.
Yeah, I hope she has a full week off, because she's doing the Giro. They announced that she'll be doing the Giro in preparation for the Olympics, which gives me so much hope for the start list of the Giro this year. I think, we've talked before about how in years past they've not had a super exciting lineup at the Giro, but I think this year we're going to see something different. But like SD Works, if you look at their start list for this race, like they had Mies Bredewald. She's not really been as good right now as she was at the tail end of last season, which is fine. She'll she'll get there, I think. But in terms of her being active in the race, wasn't really. Elena Cecchini was riding super well, and Blanca Voss as well, but still not on the same level as like their counterparts at Little Trek. They didn't have Nia Fischer-Black, who was riding incredible earlier in the spring. So I'm really curious why she's not doing the Ardennes. Perhaps we'll see her for Flèche Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège coming up. And they just, maybe they'll switch her and Capecchi. But yes, Matt has insider information.
Sorry. Yes, Fischer-Black is supposed to be racing Flèche Wallonne on Wednesday. And Capecchi at the moment is down to race Liège on Sunday.
No. No, rest her, God damn it.
Well, you just need to squeeze a few more UCI points out of her for my fantasy team, and then she can have a rest.
No. Oh, yeah, actually, then she's going to be cooked for the rest of the season.
Yeah, on second thoughts, actually, that's a good point.
I notice, I think with Demi, she's just lacking the punch. Like, is it because of a lot of altitude? But I think we can't take too much away from Amstel, and maybe not from Brabants either, because, you know, it takes a race or two to get the legs going again. So it's a shame that she didn't get a full race in the legs, because that might have really boosted her up for the next two. I think I definitely agree that we're not seeing her at her best. We're also seeing other riders better than last year. I think Flèche and Liège will really tell us how Demi's actually going, because Amstel is a bit of a harder race to win. But those two are her jam, so that will be really interesting.
She looked very dejected. I felt like even before the finish, like when she was on the front in the final kilometer, she just did not. She looked like she wanted to be anywhere else but on the front of that race. And even when she rode into the finish, it's not like she rode in with the group. She wasn't fighting for any position. She just like easy pedaled in. She did not look like the Demi we've seen just having a blast all over the front of a bike race. So I do hope, like, for the sake of competitive racing, that she's back at her best. It's going to be a bummer if we go into, you know, Liège-Bastogne-Liège in a week and she's not in the conversation or not fighting for the win, because as much as SC Works Pro Time has dominated the scene in the last year, you still want them to be part of the race. They animate the race. They make the racing better. So I hope that she's up there for that. Although it would be pretty cool to see a rider like Nia Fischer-Black get an opportunity.
Sorry, I'm just jumping all over everything tonight. Sorry.
No, this race is so chaotic that I feel like there's no way in a proper line, a train of thought, to cover this race, because the race was all over the place. The whole time I was just like, what the hell is happening? This group up the front is going to win, and that's great for me because Ricardo Bauernfeind's on my team. But like also, what on earth is happening here? And they let those three riders go off the front. Two of those riders won Tour de France Femmes stages last year in breakaways. So you're like,
I was just going to ask about Vollering, and you three would know this much better than I would. How much of the whole contract stuff would be playing on her mind, or could be playing on her mind? Could that be having any sort of impact on her performance? You know, there's all this conjecture about where she's going next year. Could that have a destabilizing effect for her and for the team? Or is she just going to be able to put that to the side, do you think?
Good question.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah, compared to other riders in the peloton, I think Vollering is one of those who wears her heart on her sleeve. She's a bit more emotional than a lot of the other riders that we see. And so I actually think that it would impact her and impact her place in the team as well, especially with the comments made by Danny Sam. We talked last week about how uncalled for that was, and I don't think that she would be, you know, happy in the team at the moment. And that can definitely impact how you're riding, which is something we've talked about countless times. You know, if you're happy where you are, you ride better. And so I think that it's not out of the question that that would be something that would be impacting her performance.
Has Anna been in the race car as well? Because I know she missed a bunch of races. Is she back? I haven't really noticed.
I think she was there at Amstel Gold. At least she was doing the warm-up rides with them.
Okay.
But it was so weird that she wasn't at Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah. I mean, she strikes me as a rider as well that, I'm not someone who sits on social media a ton, but from what I've seen, like, does it just because she kind of has to. She has a brand now, and she has, you know, to fulfill obligations. I think, is she a Nike athlete now too? So she's someone who probably doesn't get anything from it. So with all this talk and negativity happening out there in the universe, she's seen it pass by, probably trying not to focus on it too much. But if you're someone who doesn't really like social media, I think then maybe it hits you even harder. I don't know.
Think about the races that she won earlier in her career when she would always cry in the post-race interviews, and how refreshing it was in a way to see somebody be so open with their emotions. And Demi's always been this way. Even after Flanders, when she made that comment about Kasia, like, she's just out there. She's fully out there. And I think for someone like that, it's going to be harder to just ignore what's going on around you, what's being said, and just kind of put on the blinders and race your bike. There are definitely people who can do that. Like, I think Capecchi would be completely, like, would not even give it the time of day in her mind if she was in the same boat, for example. But for Vollering, I think that she's one of the reasons that we like her is because she's so emotional, and she really carries that emotion into her racing style. And that was good when she was happy at SC Works and winning races. But if she's not happy on the team, which clearly, like, how could you be if your director is willing to make comments like that about you in the press? Then,
it makes me wonder, like, what Danny Stam said as well, what he's saying behind closed doors as well. Like, I don't want to speculate too much, but if you've been backed for a few years by team management and been like, you're a star, we're going to back you at this race, we're going to go and win everything, and then suddenly they ice you out, even if it's like relatively professional in that team environment, that's a huge letdown. And yeah, I think if it was me, I would definitely be affected by it. So yeah, who knows what's really going on away from the media for that team, but I think it would be a really tough environment to be in. And there's a lot of directors that would be doing the wrong thing. And we've, you know, seen it when anyone gets a sniff that you're moving to another team later in the season, you have a bit of a shit run in those last few months. Imagine it happening so early in the season. I hope for her sake that they're being professional in that environment. And yeah, but who knows? There's a lot of ego in there, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think that there's a divide in the team culture with teams that are on the newer end. FDJ Suez isn't on the newer end. They've developed so much with the riders in mind that I think that they're a team that, you know, is super supportive of their riders no matter what, and is growing with the professionalism of the sport. I think I could say the same of Little Trek. Like DSM Firmenich PostNL, they've also adapted a lot in the years as the peloton has progressed. And I know that they've had some weird tactics in the past, and tactics, they've had some weird approaches in the past to training and whatnot. But I think that that's a team that has, you know, been like, this isn't working for us, and changed a bit, at least from what I've heard from riders that are currently on the team. And I think teams that have been around for a really, really long time would maybe struggle a little bit more with the growing professionalism of the sport, kind of stuck in their ways in a little bit. And for a team like SC Works Pro Time, like, again, not saying that this is the case at all, but I mean, I guess you could look at a team like that who's been run by the same guy for a really, really long time. Perhaps it's an environment that hasn't adapted with the professionalism of the sport like some other teams have.
Yep, good points, Abby.
And I think that it's safe to say that because of Danny's comments about not wanting to pay Demi Vollering €1 million.
I think it goes back to actually when, as far back as when Lizzie Deignan wanted to have a baby, and they're like, nope, we're not supporting that.
So, absolutely.
And he outwardly said, like, you're not going to come back. She sure did come back, and she won a tour, like, as one of her first freaking races. And in her first year got fourth, I think, at, like, the World Championships. So anyway, people like him, I have very mixed opinions about.
I hope that it doesn't impact the rest of her season, because, yeah, we want to see her up there and winning races for Matt's fantasy team, because Matt is actually currently in, I believe, third in the fantasy league. Let's see the update. So I'll go from last to first, shall I? In last place, with 4,131 points. We have Tills with the Collective Cartel. Close on her heels, second to last. Wait, other way around. Second to last, we have Matt Deneef with 4,656 points. In third, we have Gracie Elvin, 5,204 points. In second, the second most glorious comeback of this league so far, we have myself with 5,369 points. Take that, curse. And leading the standings still, we have Lauren Rowney with 6,387 points. So a good 1,000 points above me. That's a big lead.
My greatest achievement in this sport so far. Definitely.
Yeah, nice. You have work, one ladies. Rider who still has 0 points. In Micah Vanderdoen.
I don't even know if she's raced yet. I guess she hasn't.
She has.
I think a few of us. I was way off. Good thing we have transfer season coming up, huh?
Is it a bit like picking the right queue, though? If you're like waiting in line and you're like, that queue's quicker and you jump and then it's not.
Yep.
You don't want to jump the gun on the transfers.
No, this is true. I think there's a few transfers we've all got our eyes on, though, that we're like,
I know exactly who I've got my eye on for the transfers.
Alan Van Dyke, right?
Fight you for him,
if I get there first.
I do want to say, Abby, you had the biggest win of the weekend in possibly one of the best lines written on Escape Collective so far. It's always best to keep sprinting well past the line, or else your game of chicken egg ends with egg on your face. Brilliant.
So good.
Brilliant.
It was just such a, like, nay, nay.
Nay, nay, weebis. Weebis talk.
I mean, yeah, like I said, SC Works Pro Time, they play this game of chicken, and the Peloton gets really annoyed with them, and the DSs get really annoyed with them. It's like, what's the rule? You have 10 second advantage per 1 kilometer, and they like to flirt with like a 13 second advantage and think they can pull it back. But, sometimes it works for them. In this case, it totally worked. Trek ended up doing the work for them. Sometimes it doesn't and they lose the race. But I think if you were to balance out how many times their game of chicken works and how many times it doesn't work, they're very much in favor of like, sometimes they don't touch the front at all and they still win the race with a rider like Weebus, and it's just like, come on, guys. Which is easy to do when you have Weebus in the peloton, right? But unless she stops sprinting like a kilometer before the line.
she won't be I don't think she'll be doing this again for a while.
I mean, I still can't get over how much Trek fucked it up. They were like by far the favorite team going in with their duo of Shirin and Aliza. And I think that they could have won this race if they had just pulled that brake back sooner and then done their thing. You know, looking at their spring so far, they've had such a phenomenal spring that it's like it was bound to all come crashing down at some point. And it's not like it's the end. Like, they can still win. I don't know if they can win Flesh alone. Maybe. If they have Gaia Riolini, maybe.
Correct.
Aliza has been on the podium a few times there. Not quite good enough, but...
I know, but I think the rider to beat is Kasia, though. Like, how is anybody going to beat Kasia in this race?
Who was it last year that said Femme Van Empel was going to win this race one day? I remember someone saying that, to watch out for her, particularly at this race. No, it wasn't me. I would have claimed that.
Yeah, sounds like something you would have said.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm scratching my head a little bit with it, because if Demi had been in Demi form, she would have been outright favorite for me. But Flesh Wallonne's always a really, it's such a specific race, isn't it? Like, there's no other race that finishes with this really iconic, horrible, steep climb that only a few people can really win. There's like literally maybe three. There's a handful. Not even a handful. Who are your picks?
I think Riolini can win it. She was third last year. I think Niamh Fisher-Black as well.
Who was second?
Lippitt was second last year.
Okay, so no Lippitt. Demi not in quite Demi form.
Do you guys know if Lippitt is injured or something? I just don't understand why she's not raced at all.
She had a foot injury from the off season. From running, I believe. Yeah, she was doing some running or something and gave her like, wasn't a stress fracture or something in her foot?
Oh.
Something like that.
I remember that. Yeah. Okay. It's coming back to me now. I remember. Whose fantasy team is she on?
She is on Gracie's. 0 points.
Yeah, she is. You're right. 0 points.
She would have been a great, great pick for this season.
Still will be. There's still time. I think for me, looking at the start list now, Little Trek with Guy Rilini and Elise Longaborghini, plus Amanda Spratt, who looked super good on the Cowberg, on the final ascent of the Cowberg. She's chipping away. It's great. It bodes well for races coming up. Really think that this is like a pure climber's climb. Like, it's such a short effort that there has to be a lot of power, like almost a sprinty climber, which is why Demi was so strong last year and why Anna van der Breggen won this race 7 years in a row. Like, Ashley Moulman Passio, perhaps, maybe this is her year. She just spent 3 weeks at altitude going into the Ardennes, and it's her last season. She's actually retiring at the end of this season, so maybe it's one for her. But she also has Sarah Gigante on her team, who is super strong.
I was gonna say,
Matt's looking like, I was waiting for that name to be thrown out, and if it wasn't, I was going to do it.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. If she can get herself into a good position at the bottom of that climb, watch out. I think, I'm not sure if she'll win it, but I think she's a strong enough climber to be riding amongst it. But yeah, she'll need to get herself into a good position by the bottom, and that'll be cool to see.
I want to see Need Fisher Black. I want to see Demi leading her out into it. She could be a good shout.
I am super excited Need Fisher Black is going to be back in the races. She looked so good at Trofeo Alfredo Binda. Yeah, I just, man, wish that she got more opportunities to race. Although there are a lot, I hope, coming for her this season in the races to come. But we've seen a disappointingly little of her, I think, given how well she was riding earlier in the season at both Valenciana and also Trofeo Alfredo Binda. Lavita Music for FDJ. She was riding well earlier in the year as well. I think we could also, like, obviously Kasia is a rider who's done well at this race in the past and I think is riding relatively okay. Like, she was second at Flanders, for goodness sake, and also looked decent yesterday, even if her attacks were for naught. She definitely gave it a good go. Antonia Niedermayer returns to the peloton. I don't think she's a contender in the race, but Matt's excited. Juliette Labou, she was kind of up there a little bit at Amstel Gold and I think would have been even more active had it been a more selective race. She's a strong climber. She's won, you know, the queen stage of the Giro before, so she's one to mention.
Marta Cavalli's back as well.
Yeah, back in the peloton after a bit of altitude training, coming back from her injury from team camp earlier in the year. Human Powered Health has Ruth Edwards. I want to see how she does in a race like this, with this climb. She was back in the day, way back in the day. She did super well at the Philadelphia Cycling Classic. If you guys remember that race.
Yes.
Which has a similar finish to this one.
Yes.
That was a really long time ago. That was like 10 years ago. So yeah, I think this is actually maybe the most wide open that we've seen this race in a long time. We had a couple years post Anna van der Breggen just dominance of this race that we had some good wins, like from Cavalli when she won. That was after she'd won the Amstel Gold race as well in 2022, and she did the double with both wins, and with Demi Vollering last year, and with Demi not as strong right now as she was last year. I think that this race is just kind of wide open for Sunday, so for Wednesday.
It'll be an exciting last kilometer. Most exciting part of the race. No.
I can't pick, it'll I be a can't good pick race. My favorite. I couldn't. Kasia. I pick Kasia. I'm going with my heart.
Let's all just go with our draft picks. I'm going with Niamh. Niamh Fisher Black.
I can't believe it. You got her before I did. Sad day. Her and Emma Norsgaard, two of my favorites.
Can't have all your favorites on your team, Abby.
All right. Should we wrap up the episode? I feel like we barely scratched the surface of Amstel Gold Race because it was just like such a ridiculous event, but that's okay.
That's what the Discord's for.
We did the best we could, right? All right. Obsessions, anybody?
I just read a great sports biography. It's not that new. It was written in 2020 and it's Megan Rapinoe, the American footballer, and she's just rad, but it was finally reading her book. It was actually like you could really tear through it, but it was really well written and put together. So yeah, some lot of advocacy stuff in there, which really floats my boat, gets me motivated, just, you know, trying to stand up for yourself and for other people. And of course, reading a good sports story is always fun. But yeah, I would highly recommend that. It's called One Life.
One Life.
Actually just started a sport biography as well. Last night, Jesse Diggins, Brave Enough. Shout out to Brody Chapman, who lent me that. Surprisingly, I haven't read it yet. Love a good sports book.
One of my favorite ever sport autobiographies was Andre Agassi's Open. You read that? That was a brilliant one. That's
really
a one to go
Lizzie
back and
Dagnan's
read.
One from a while ago. And I hope that she does.
Oh, yeah.
I want a sequel.
Steadfast.
Because everything that's happened
cool.
since that book came out is like
yeah.
her whole career. So
yeah.
I hope she does a part two. If she needs a ghostwriter, I volunteer. My obsession is similarly women's sports related. On Sunday, the Canada versus the USA for the Hockey World Championships, Canada won it in overtime, 5-6, 6-5, which was awesome. But what's even more awesome is that USA Hockey announced that over 100,000 females have registered to play hockey across the country for like in the last year since. Well, wow. Maybe not since the formation of the Professional Women's Hockey League, but I would be surprised if the two things weren't connected to each other. Having women's hockey aired live, pretty rad. So it's super cool because it's a sport that, like, sometimes when I look at cycling, I'm like, I don't think any of you know how good you have it compared to other women's sports. And women's hockey is one of those that has just been totally screwed for many, many, many years. And especially since the pandemic, when the former league was pretty much shut down because of COVID. It's been pretty much the worst it's ever been after that until basically this year. So it's awesome to see so many women more interested in hockey.
I didn't realize you were that into hockey, but you are
Canadian.
Yeah. You're half Canadian or full? I'm
going to choose not to answer that.
Okay. Your father and your mother Canadian?
No, just my mom.
Now I've got the details.
But I have Canadian citizenship and Canadian passport, so I'm Canadian.
I have a dumb question for you, Abby. Are you talking about field hockey or ice hockey?
Oh,
ice
Matt. Hockey. Okay. Matt.
Well, this is
even I, the ignorant Australian as well, is like, she's Canadian. I know she's Canadian. She's not American. This is definitely
well, this is
on
the
ice.
Thing. This is the thing. If she wasn't Canadian, I would have thought she was talking about field hockey.
Yeah.
Good thing I checked.
Actually, we've got a pretty good field hockey team,
yeah,
I think, in
we do.
Oz, right?
Absolutely.
Aussies are super into field hockey.
Yeah. We've got the climate for it, I suppose. Actually, Belgium has a great team. So I can go for either one now, sort of.
Did you know that Ed Sheeran's wife field hockey in college?
I didn't even know he was married. I'm sorry.
Fun fact. They were like high school. They had high school crushes on each other, and then they reconnected later in life. And
oh, that's cute.
It's a cute story.
Yeah, that is a cute
story.
It's
one of the good ones. Lauren, obsessions?
No, I'm trying to think what I'm obsessed with.
I can go if you want.
Matt?
Yeah, I'll go while you're thinking if you like, Lauren. I'm just obsessed with our members. I just got back from 2 weeks in Belgium, as Lauren knows and as some listeners will know. I was just there with most of the escape team and a whole bunch of our members that were there riding bikes around Flanders and Roubaix and all those kind of cool places. And we talk often about how nice the Discord community is and particularly the Wheel Talk channel, of course. But getting to meet all those folks in person, the folks that turned up was amazing. Like, just, you know, a lot of us have jobs because of them, and it couldn't really be overstated how grateful we were for their support, and getting to meet them and kind of share that firsthand was really good. And so nice to hear about how much people love what we do and how many positive comments we got about Wheel Talk in particular. Shout out to David, Helen, and Jeff in particular from the trip, who were very kind in what they said. But yeah, just a lot of gratitude for those people for supporting what we do, not only in terms of the website, but coming along to the summit, because stuff like that make it possible for us to do cool things like this. So yeah, I guess just a big thank you to everyone that took part.
I love seeing all the people who came to the summit on the in the stands at Paris-Roubaix Femme.
Yes, they got some TV time, huh?
Yeah. I was rewatching it a couple of days ago with one of my friends who came to stay after Paris-Roubaix Femme, and she hadn't actually seen the race because when you're at the race, it is quite hard to watch the race. And so she was like, "Can we rewatch the race?" So we rewatched, and when they got into the velodrome, I was like, "Ah, oh, there's our members right there, all lined up."
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'm not obsessed with. I ran out of reading content, so my mom gave me her Kindle. I've got a Kobo. Anyway, I'm reading Britney Spears' book, and I really do not recommend it. I'm really struggling with it because this sounds terrible, but she clearly doesn't have a ghostwriter, so it's her. Like, you can tell, it's definitely the way that it's written, it's her. So I'm really struggling with that. Actually, like, yeah, so that's my non-recommendation for the week. What I'm obsessed with, what is it, a Vibe and Unsubscribe from another podcast that I listen to. They do that every week, Vibe and Unsubscribe. Anyway, so what am I obsessed with? I'm on my last few days of maternity leave, sadly, so I'm just enjoying the last few days at home. The weather in Belgium has turned shit again. Sorry, Abby, hopefully it's better this weekend. So we're inside enjoying the last few days before shit gets real again. Yep.
I'll try to bring the sunshine. Although,
please do.
It looks like it's going to rain here as well.
Or a little bit of warmth would be great.
I'll do my
That's
best.
All you need in life.
I am going to check a bag, so I'll try to squeeze it in there.
Squeeze it in.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. Lauren and I are going to see each other at Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Again, another bike race.
Weekend. Ugh.
Yep, and we've got something, we're planning something for certain Italian riders, but that will have to be in the podcast the next week. So hopefully we pull off this joke that Hannes is planning. I'll tell you off.
Oh dear.
Off the pod. Yeah,
I'm so intrigued.
He's really invested in this.
Perfect place to end it, because now I want to know. So we'll cut it off here, and we'll be back next week to talk about Liège-Bastogne-Liège and Flesh Bloom. Thanks everyone for listening, and thanks you guys for joining me today.
So Hannes,